This is Shine On, the Health and Happiness Show, with new episodes every week on how to live well. Shine On is heard all over the world as a podcast, but it's heard first on the radio in New York's Hudson Valley. Hi, it's Casey. Thank you so much for tuning in to Shine On. Hope all is going well as we've entered the fall season here in the beautiful Hudson Valley. And people are, you know, running around doing that fall thing. Kids are back in school. I have a young friend. She's a mom in her, I would say, early 40s, and she's got two little kids. And she's also navigating life with a mom in her mid to late 70s, right? So she's taking care of the two kids on the one end and the husband and the big career. And she's also helping mom navigate through being a widow, through technology today, just through doctor's appointments and managing lives. So we have a special guest here today. Her name is Paula. She is an attorney, and she has a book that can help people manage this road that you kind of only travel once or twice in life, and you pick up this information that's really valuable, sometimes the hard way. We're going to try to make it easy. Paula, we've been chatting off the air, but I never even asked you, how do I pronounce your last name?
It's Paula Almgren.
Almgren, just like it looks. Almgren, A-L-M-G-R-N. The book is Elder Care, The Rules Navigating the Legal, Financial, Medical, Housing, and Care Maze. And you were saying this is what you deal with every day.
That's right. Most families come in here and maybe someone needs a little care. Maybe they really want to plan ahead for care. Or maybe they're in crisis mode. It just depends on the family, what's happening. And it is a journey, like you were saying, and it is a road. And there's a lot of detours and speed bumps and cliffs and snake pits. And there's, you know, so many. And there's some nice rest areas, you know. So knowing the rules, knowing what's ahead really helps families, you know, minimize crisis. We really don't want to be in crisis. You know, the more you know, the better advocate you're going to be for your spouse or your aunt, uncle, friend, family member, you know. So reading Elder Care, The Rules, that I really talk about every aspect of care. And in writing it, I realized, and that's why there's a subtitle, but I realized care isn't just about care. You know, there's legal, medical, financial, housing, and actual care. That's care. So there's all these aspects. An action in one area can create ripples in others, or, you know, sometimes tsunamis in others. So they all are interrelated and they all need to kind of be addressed and worked on with the families.
And we're talking about a couple of tricky things here. One is we're talking about the people who used to be in charge. Right? Our parents, our elders, they used to be in charge of everything. And now we, the children or nieces, nephews, grandchildren, extended family, now we're having to get in their business. And for some families, I think of my own family, it's like, no, you don't go there. You don't tell me what to do. And that comes out far too harsh, but there's so many nuanced levels to that. But now we're talking to mom and dad about, should you be driving? Should you be driving at night? Should you be taking this medication or taking a class so you're not falling down? Like, all of a sudden, we're the caregivers where we used to be the children. It's so hard to navigate.
But having the conversations early and together with the family is key, right? Because, you know, you just look at their house. Okay, where is the mailbox? Are they like walking out to the street? Is it, you know, a downward sloping driveway? Where's the washer and dryer? How do you get your meds filled? Is there something? There's so many little ways to help people age in place, which most people want. And having a conversation about it kind of starts opening the door. And yes, there's some people that are resistant, but most of my clients, they want to talk to their kids about it because they feel better about that. Like, at least my kids know what I want, you know?
Right.
So there's all these things in their housing situation, but then the financials are key because most kids don't know their parents' financial situation, and getting a chapter called Fix on the Financials, because you need to know, what are their assets? What's their income? What's their fixed cost? What if mom starts needing $2,000 a month of care? How long is her money going to last? But is there any benefits we can put in? You know, is there some community Medicaid benefits that could get put in? Is there some asset protection planning that should be done? What about VA benefits? You know, that's real money when people get VA money, because that is that could really stretch out the care dollars.
Wow. Okay. Well, in my world, I'm never going to know my mother's finances. That's never going to happen. But she does talk about that with one of my brothers. So, right? So it's not like the whole family is going to have access to every part of this, but maybe the whole family could each take a role, the thing that they're good at. Like, I'm called in case of emergency, right? I'm the one you call on when there's, you know, bandages involved, not my sister or brothers. But so maybe that's what you can start having a conversation first with your siblings about who can broach what role. Yeah. So, and I love that. So let's talk about the plan. Would the plan start in the home?
Like, generally, people will come to us and they're not saying, oh, Paula, I want to go to a nursing home. Can you help me? You know, tell me. But part of what we talk about with everybody is what's the plan? But everyone does need to know the nursing home Medicaid rules and regulations, because you can have a certain amount of assets. There's some assets that aren't countable. So when you're looking at like Medicaid and a nursing home, you know, there's four ways to pay for care. Okay, just to back up a sec. There's Medicare, but that only pays for the first 100 days of skilled nursing. And that is, you need to have those 3-night admission at the hospital, and then you can get up to the first 100 days covered. So there, then it ends. So a lot of people think Medicare does pay for long-term care. And then there's long-term care insurance, which most people do not have, but I think is great when people have it. And it really makes a difference in our spreadsheet, because that'll really stretch out people's money. And then there's private pay, which is not sustainable for most people. I mean, they're, you know, nursing homes are from $8,000 to, you know, $18,000 a month, and most people can't afford that. And then Medicaid, that covers 63% of the people in nursing homes are covered by Medicaid. So, you know, how does that impact you? Like, if you're married, there's a different set of rules. You know, generally, there's no transfer penalty between spouses. So spouse one can transfer to spouse two. There's no transfer penalty. There's only a 5-year look back period when you're transferring to trust that, you know, you don't have control of, or to kids.
Okay. So I understood about 40% of that. Honestly, I understood 40% of that. And you're so confident in speaking this language. I want to go all the way back. No, I want to start here. Transferring what? What are we transferring with Medicaid?
Yeah. So if I have a married couple and one of them is in needs nursing home care, we can transfer the home from the two spouses to the spouse who's at home, not the nursing home spouse.
Right?
So that's allowed under Medicaid rules, because married couples can transfer assets to each other without penalty.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So they can transfer money.
In the house, right.
Within the household, within the husband and wife can transfer money back and forth.
Correct.
My understanding was when you got old, you had to hide all your money, because if you end up in a nursing home, the nursing home is just going to take all of it, and your house and your pets and your, you know, your tools in the shed. That's how I understood it. But tell me what it really is.
So first of all, there's no hiding of money.
Okay.
So some people want to be proactive and they say, okay, I want to gift to my kids and start a 5-year look back period. And then I know these particular assets that I gifted are protected after 5 years and one day. Some people transfer their house to their kids and they keep a life estate. So they still have to pay all the upkeep and expenses. But then when they die, their life estate ends and here are the kids owning the house. And when they transfer the house to the kids and retain a life estate, they're starting a 5-year look back period. And after 5 years and one day, you know, the house is protected. So there's all different rules in all different states, and it depends on the family. So everyone has this unique set of circumstances. And but once you know the rules and how it impacts your family, then people can make educated decisions.
After 5 years and one day, this look back period, who's looking? Medicaid?
Nursing home Medicaid.
Who's looking?
Yes.
It's 5 years and one day.
So Medicaid application says, have you made any gifts in the last 5 years? And after 5 years and one day, you can say, no, check the box, no.
Okay, but what if I say yes? I gave $25,000 to so-and-so. They're going to go get it?
Yeah, it can disqualify you for some period of time. They can't get it, but it could cause a disqualification period for you for nursing home Medicaid.
It could cause a disqualification period if I start to divest myself of my...
Or you could have just made a gift. Your daughter renovated her kitchen and you're just the mom and you said, well, I'm going to give you $25 to renovate your kitchen. You know, that happens. People give money for weddings and grandchildren, you know. So there's certain gifts that are not counted. You know, it depends on the state, but...
Right. Okay.
But yes, you have to show it. Right. And I just want to back up and talk about like basic estate planning documents too, that everyone needs, you know? So I was just saying, we have to transfer the house from, you know, let's say it's a husband and wife to the wife who's at home. Well, how is she doing that if the husband doesn't have capacity? So estate planning isn't just for I've died and now what happens to my money? It's like I'm incapacitated now. So what happens? Who's going to control my finances and who's going to control my health care? So in the finance area, there's a durable power of attorney for asset management. And that's basically I'm alive, but I'm incapacitated. Power of attorney ends when you die. Who is going to do all of my banking and my bookkeeping and looking at contracts and dealing with my mail and moving assets around if I all of a sudden need care, you know? So that's a document that where you name one or two people to do that. You always want to have alternates to that. And that avoids a conservatorship in the court over your finances. And then the healthcare documents are a healthcare proxy. And I'm in Massachusetts, and every state's different with this, but in Massachusetts, we can only have one at a time serve. So I name my spouse and my child A, then child B. You have to have the people's cell numbers, you know. Yes. You don't want a healthcare proxy that says, you know, my spouse, Joseph Johnson. I mean, there's a million of them, and where is he? And so you really want the cell numbers on that healthcare proxy, and that avoids a guardianship of your body. So even if you don't go to a lawyer, like every doctor's office, every hospital, they have the forms, you know, they're standard forms for each state. You must have one, have at least two people, and then have their cell numbers on it.
What?
You know, another thing that we do with healthcare proxy is under federal law, there's the HIPAA Act. And this says, you can share my protected healthcare information. These are not decision makers with my spouse, my three children, and you're not liable. So that's a key thing. Your mom's in the hospital. You want to know, I want to look at her blood work. You want to get a second opinion. If you're on this HIPAA letter, they can give it to you and they're not liable for sharing with you.
Okay. How do I get that HIPAA letter?
The way we do it, it's, you know, it's a federal format. So we follow the federal law on that. Every doctor's office has you sign one when you go in.
Right.
But I like this overarching one that doesn't, those little ones don't detract from our federal one, but it's a federal law. And it just says, you can share, you're not liable with these people. Share my information.
We're talking to Paula Almgren. Her book is Elder Care, The Rules, Navigating the Legal, Financial, Medical, Housing, and Care Maze. What I'm hearing right now that as, you know, we approach midlife and later life, we need to have what I think could be called like elder care hygiene. We need to clean up our acts in this area so we don't create a mess later in life for our friends. This also reminds me of like the first year of college, you know, when you, right, shaking your head, the first year of college, you just don't know anything about where anything is or how to operate that system. And then you learn how to operate that system and get through your college life. And then you know it and you could share it with somebody else, but you really don't use that again. Know what I mean? So here we are again with this later in life set of like an obstacle course. And it is really complicated that we need to understand and deal with. Yeah. And just be aware of, I guess, you know, so many
people. At some point, everyone's going to be a caregiver, you know, and it's and like your friend, she's in her 40s, you know, there's kids in their 30s whose parents need care. So it affects, or it's people's spouses. So it affects all of us. And then knowing, you know, and this is the rules in elder care, the rules are general rules. You know, it's a good starting point. It's a reference. Mm-hmm. And then from there, if you take that knowledge, I mean, just for example, like, you know, your mom's in the hospital and she's being discharged. It's kind of a hectic day and you need to get those discharge papers. You know, like so many people walk away without the discharge papers. Now, where is mom going? Is she going home? Is she going to skilled nursing? Is she going to a hospice? Is she going to a rehab? So, you know, you have to have those and you have to have the prescriptions. And there's so many like little things that really trip people up. You know, so it's just like when people need care, they're just getting kind of bad information from many different sources. And, you know, we like hospital discharge planners, even, you know, social workers, people on the nursing floor, your hairdresser, that's a big one. Everyone's getting, you know, elder care advice from them. But like, and they're just getting like totally beat up, these people. Yeah. And, you know, just having like a basic idea of the rules, like is very empowering for people. And then they can get more information based on their state, you know, their mom or dad, or, you know, spouse's situation.
Paula Almgren, the book is Elder Care, The Rules. I remember my mom, you know, everything is coming to me through, everyone who's listening is putting this through the filter of their own situation.
Right.
My mom is 95, lives alone, entirely independent. She has, you know, her brain is as sharp as a tack. Her speech is slower, but her brain is still buzzing along the super high.
Yeah.
But she is fiercely private. And I remember my brother-in-law said to her 25 years ago, you know what, Jane, you've got, you know, this house in Florida. You should really put it in trust for your children. He had already lost a parent, and, you know, been through part of this. And my mother was so offended. She felt like, oh my God, you know, I'm not even 80 and the vultures are circling. They want my house. She took it completely the wrong way. Have you seen that before?
Sometimes. Most of the time people say, I really want to protect my house for my kids. I mean, a lot of people, their houses are this emotional, it's not like money. It's this special place where maybe the kids grew up or where they go to have holidays. And a lot of times people are the opposite of that. But I can see that read. She's also 95. So she's, you know, a different generation.
A different
thing about this is that, you know, with the healthcare proxy, we don't know who it is. But, you know, when you have a healthcare proxy, you have to have a conversation with those people. Like, what do you want? One of the resources in the back of the book is this healthcare questionnaire that I wrote with the nurse from my office about, because it's hard out of just thin air to have a conversation. But if you have this document, you can keep notes. You're talking, your brother's there, your sister's there. And like everyone's kind of getting on the same page with mom's wishes. So she might not want to talk about money, but she has shared that with your brother. So that's good, right? But her healthcare, whoever her agent is, needs to have a copy in the alternates too of the document and have the conversation.
Yeah, that we did. That we do. Right. I had the healthcare conversation.
That's good.
I got the documents, but come for her house, man, because
yes,
she's put that in her will, and that is her decision where it's going and when, right?
Right. So just on a will, so everyone calls here and they need a will. They ask for a will. But what most people, so a will means you die and you have an asset just in your name and you have to go through probate court, list the assets, list the value, list the kids. And here's mom who's super private, which most people are, you know, but people don't really want everyone to know what their assets are. And then we have to put the kids' addresses, how much money, who's disabled, which I really don't like when that happens. So most people have trusts, like revocable trusts. Or irrevocable if they want to give away assets, but revocable, they're still in control. The trust owns the asset, like the house gets titled in the trust, the Florida house gets titled in the trust. Now you've avoided probate in mom's state and in Florida. It's called ancillary probate. And then on death or incapacity, nobody knows her business. Nobody knows how much money she has, who's getting what. It's just among the family through the trustee.
This is what my brother-in-law was trying to say, and my mom didn't want to hear it, and we've never talked about it again. But that is something that we could do. When can you put things in trust? Can you do that at any age?
Yes. So if you have a revocable trust, now it's signed. Step two, right after it's signed, is fund it. put the assets in it. Because if you don't, then you're still going to probate to put the assets in the trust. So you put it into the trust during your lifetime. So when you sign your trust, you're also going to sign the deed of your house into your trust. That's done. And now that the trust exists, you can have your investment advisor retitle your account from your name as a human into your name as trustee of your trust. So it gets funded now.
Okay. So when I key, when we put things in a trust, who owns it?
It's your trust. It's your social. You control it. You're a trustee.
Right. And then when I pass, it just gets passed to the next person.
Yeah. It just gets passed out under the terms of your trust. No probate, simple, private.
We should do this, right?
Yeah.
Everybody should do this?
Everybody should do it. No downside.
Okay, great. Give me, in the time that we have left, give me a few other things that everybody should do.
Well, depending on people's age, I think looking into long-term care insurance is a really good thing for people because, like, I'm just saying, here you are, your mom's 95. If you had long-term care insurance and you ever needed care, then it starts paying out. There's two types of policies. One is the traditional, where you pay and pay and pay over time. And if you ever need help with two activities of daily living, which is like eating, bathing, dressing, toileting, transferring, sometimes medication management, then it starts paying out and then you don't have to pay your premiums anymore. And it's a daily rate. So if you have 300 a day, but you're only using 100, you're banking 200 a day. Then there's this hybrid policy, which most people really like because they end up putting in, it's usually around $100,000 to buy it. But if you die and you don't use it, you get your $100,000 back in a life insurance. So it's a hybrid life insurance, long-term care insurance. And if you ever need it, it's 100,000 plus, like it grows, you know, could grow to $600,000, $700,000. So that's kind of something that's worth exploring, even if you decide not to do it. I think knowing about that and how that impacts you is really helpful because really the only way people's money goes down unless the market tanks is with care. Care, you know, can really hit people's money. And then a lot of people, they look at these continuing care retirement communities and you buy into these communities, but you get, it depends on, there's all different sets of rules, but generally you get 90% of the purchase price back. We assign that to people's trust to avoid probate when they die. And then they never have to worry about Medicaid because when you buy into a continuing care retirement community, you're paying the same amount, whether you're in independent living, memory care, assisted living, or nursing home care. So there's all different ways these are structured. But, you know, people have to read the contract and really know what they're buying. But that's another way that people get a little bit of peace, especially like people who don't have kids or don't have someone who's really going to look out for them or their kid lives far away. If they buy into these places, there's a wellness nurse, they build this friendships and communities, and then they kind of circle people who they trust around them.
Yeah. I'll tell you. And when you have a community like that, I think of my mother-in-law who went into a memory care facility in Vermont during COVID and was taken care of like a queen. Like these people were so loving and so caring and so thoughtful. And they Zoomed with us every holiday. On a Zoom, they initiated, you know, like they took such good care of my husband's mom. And you know, those places are just worth their weight in gold. Those people are angels. And once again, when you were speaking, I understood about 40% of it. So so thank you for the book, Elder Care, the Rules. You know, we have to educate ourselves and we have to be as open as we can about all of this. And now I know you have the book, Paula Almgren. Do you also have like a website or more information or where? How can we find you?
Yeah. So I just find like it's a scary time for families. It's overwhelming, but you kind of just got to dig in and get knowing the rules. In our, we have a website. It's called BerkshireLawGroup.com.
BerkshireLawGroup.com.
Yes.
I thank you for being you. I hope you'll come back anytime you want and we can talk more about this. And just thanks for all the families that you're helping along the way.
Thank you so much, Casey.